let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. In a study of the Old Testament, apostasy can lead a nation to self-destruct. Will America mend its ways and return to God? Author Philip Wittig recognized events that led God to rendering his righteous judgment against ancient Israel. He saw similar events occurring in the United States that led him to ask the question, will these events also lead God to declare his righteous judgment against the United States? His goal is to help the reader connect the dots, understand and respond to this extremely important issue of saving America. Philip Wittig, author of Apostasy Can Lead a Nation to Self-Destruct, Will America Mend Its Ways and Return to God, joining us once again on This Week in America. Philip, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us once again today.
Well, it's a pleasure doing these interviews, so I'm glad to do that.
Well, it is always a pleasure to have you here. It's so much to talk about that we were not able to cover in our first interview. By the way, you'll find that if you go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, audio in the archive, video at YouTube. Let's start a little background on yourself. Would you please share with the listeners the story of your life as a child through elementary school? What was that like for you?
Well, I grew up in Sheridan County, Nebraska, which is farm and ranch country in the Panhandle. Our home was about 20 miles from the nearest town. I was the oldest of three siblings. I had a sister and a brother. Both now are deceased. I have great memories of our family mealtime as we all gathered around the table, asked God's blessing on our food, and at the end of the meal, we thanked him for the food we had eaten. Each morning after breakfast, my father, a hard-working farmer rancher, would lead the family in daily devotions. I became acquainted with biblical history, and to this day, I can recall many important biblical events that were delivered in those morning devotions. I began my elementary education as a first grader in a one-room country school 3 miles from our home. It was in a fenced-in area in the middle of a pasture. There were 9 or 10 students in school. We got our water from the well that provided water for the cattle that grazed in the pasture surrounding the school. When I was in the fifth grade, my parents bought a farm and ranch that was closer to town. There I attended a two-room school. It was a rural school. There were 30 students in our, with one teacher teaching all 8 grades. The following year, there were 2 teachers, each teaching 4 grades, and I graduated from the 8th grade at this school. And I dare not ignore my elementary education and my Christian faith that occurred during those years. I remember my mother sitting with me and helping me memorize the Ten Commandments, the Apostles' Creed, and the Lord's Prayer. That memorization included the meaning of each. I attended Sunday school nearly every Sunday, after which we as a family attended worship service at rural Emmanuel Lutheran Church.
That was such a great foundation, and so much of who you are today reflected in your book, Apostasy Can Lead a Nation to Self-Destruct. It came out of those early years. Let's pick it up there and talk about the secondary and post-secondary education. What were those years like for you?
Well, in 1948, I began my high school education at Gordon High School, and during the year, I stayed in town with my maternal grandmother because winter weather in the Nebraska Panhandle was unpredictable, and country roads were often impassable after snowstorms. Many of the boys from ranch and farm families enrolled in the agricultural program offered by the high school. I was no exception. I graduated as a salutatorian from high school in 1952. In September of 1952, I matriculated at Dana College at Blair, Nebraska. Dana was a Lutheran liberal arts college. I enrolled in the pre-engineering curriculum. However, in my second year, I enrolled in the business administration curriculum. I graduated in 1956 with a Bachelor of Science degree in Business Administration. Upon a graduation, I applied for Navy OCS, or Officer Candidate School, at Newport, Rhode Island, and was accepted for the class beginning in October of 1956. In OCS, I came to appreciate the knowledge I had acquired in those pre-engineering courses at Dana.
You know, it's interesting, the experiences that you had were up into the Navy now. What was that like, sort of different from the educational background? What was the Navy years like?
Well, while I was at OCS, it seemed like we marched everywhere we went. This was a new experience for this kid from Nebraska Panhandle. At Morning Colors, we also had personnel inspection. We had to have proper uniform and shine shoes. After that, we marched to our classes. After study hall each evening, one company on a rotating basis stood guard duty on the base, and upon graduation at the end of February in 1957, we were commissioned ensigns in the U.S. Navy. Prior to my first duty assignment aboard ship, I had orders to attend damage control school and firefighting school. I learned the importance of maintaining the watertight integrity to protect the stability designed into Navy ships. I also learned how to fight dangerous shipboard fires. In April 1957, I reported for duty on the Aldebaran, a refrigerated store ship. Its mission was to transport food from Norfolk, Virginia to the Mediterranean Sea for distribution to the 100-plus Navy ships operating there. I learned about the importance and effectiveness of replenishing the food supplies of the Navy's fighting ships while underway at sea. I also learned the importance of proper maintenance of the ship's exterior hull. In 1958, I was transferred to shore duty with the Naval Reserve Fleet in Orange, Texas. Some 200 ships at this location had been inactivated and mothballed to be reactivated in the event of a national emergency. Here I served as M Division officer with a crew of about 40 men. We were responsible for the maintenance and repair of the dehumidification machinery aboard each ship. In addition, we were responsible to keep the engineering records of each ship up to date. I was released from active duty in February 1960 and assigned to a shipboard reserve unit of a destroyer that was recalled to active service for 1 year on October 1961. After undergoing some repairs, the ship was assigned to a destroyer squadron operating in the Mediterranean Sea. During this time, I qualified as the officer of the deck for operations at sea. This was an important qualification for me as a Navy line officer.
With us on the program is Philip Wittig. He's the author of the book, Apostasy Can Lead a Nation to Self-Destruct. Will America Mend Its Ways and Return to God? His website is pmwittig.com. That's pmwittig.com. You get information there on the book and be able to order it, find out a little bit more of Philip's background. Of course, you can link on directly by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Philip Wittig with us on the program, talking about the experiences growing up, educational experiences in the Navy. Philip, let's talk about the adult civilian life. After you're out of the Navy, back into the civilian work corps, what was that like?
Well, in 1962, I returned to civilian life in Nebraska to help my parents with the farming and ranching, while my brother completed his time in the Army because he intended to take over the farm and ranch. In 1964, I began taking some graduate-level business courses at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln. In 1966, I was employed as the accountant at ISCO Inc., a fledgling instrument manufacturer in Lincoln, with about 30 employees and less than $1 million in annual sales. I performed accounting duties and started the data processing function by learning how to program the newly acquired accounting machine. I later utilized my Navy experience as a construction supervisor for the company's first building expansion. As the company continued to grow, I hired a computer programmer and another accountant. We were able to computerize the inventory control areas of the business, and I assumed additional financial responsibility. In the late 1970s, we installed a sophisticated computerized production inventory control and purchasing system that reduced the costs and helped the company become financially stable. ISCO became a public company in 1985 with its stock traded on the NASDAQ. This forced me to become a better and significantly more proficient writer. I was now responsible for writing the company's quarterly and annual reports required by the SEC. By the time I retired in 2001, ISCO had about 380 employees with about $60 million in annual sales.
Just an amazing growth during that period that you were with the company. Let's talk about the spiritual journey. You talked about the early years and the impact it had on your life. How about the spiritual journey during the adult years? Talk about those, please.
Okay. I attended Protestant service whenever a chaplain was aboard our ship. On shore duty, I worshipped regularly at the base chapel or at one of the Lutheran churches near the base. After I returned to civilian life, I worshipped regularly in a Lutheran church. I became a member of Sheridan Lutheran Church in 1968. I met Karen, my wife, at Sheridan Lutheran Church, where we were married in 1973. I facilitated the Sunday morning men's Bible study since 2004. I did not regularly read the Bible until about 50 years old, when I began reading the Bible nearly every day. It took me a couple of years to read the entire Bible. I then began selecting a book of the Bible and writing notes of the text I had studied. I experienced some financial adversity after I retired and came to realize God was guiding me in a different direction. I continued my Bible study. However, in the late 2008, I began writing down my observations of the text and also recording its implications for me and my life. By this time, the historical story of ancient Israel had become very interesting to me. I began to recognize that ancient Israel was on a path of geopolitical decline that eventually led to its demise. Then, as I studied the prophetic books of the Old Testament, I discovered that apostasy is what really led to its decline. Even though ancient Israel and its people from the time of its founding had been dedicated and consecrated to Almighty God, as a nation it had abandoned honoring God's commandments and failed to recognize Him as its protector. It defiantly rejected His pleas to return to Him, and eventually God reluctantly executed His righteous judgment on the defiant ancient Israel by allowing the evil Assyrians to destroy it and disperse its people.
With us on the program is Philip Wittig. His website, by the way, is pmwittig.com. That's W-I-T-T-I-G. You can link on directly by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Philip, what led you to write this book, Apostasy Can Lead a Nation to Self-Destruct?
Well, I knew that America had been a Christian nation, and I also recognized that America was in a similar state of moral decline as was ancient Israel before its demise. The question that troubled me was, how long would it be before God executed His righteous judgment against the United States? As I contemplated America's situation, I suspected there was a close connection between the story of ancient Israel and America's story, but I just was unable to recognize the connection. During my reading of Jonathan Cahn's book, The Harbinger, I came to recognize the fact that America was on the same road of apostasy as ancient Israel had traveled about 3,000 years earlier. This knowledge inspired me to write the book in a comparative format to help a reader recognize that history indeed was repeating itself with a story of ancient Israel 30 centuries earlier, and it was comparison to be taken seriously. I believe God really assisted in the writing of this book. That is why many times I say our book, to recognize the value of his assistance in that task.
The book, once again, is Apostasy Can Lead a Nation to Self-Destruct. Will America Mend Its Ways and Return to God? The author is Philip Wittig. His website is pmwittig.com. Philip, what's the benefit for a nation and its people to be consecrated and dedicated to God?
Well, I think first it's important to recognize that God is the creator of the universe and everything in it. He also is an omnipotent God. It is important to recognize he created everything, and therefore he has the right to do anything he wishes with what he created. It is his expectation that the human beings consecrated and dedicated to him would obey his commands and worship only him. Probably one of the most important benefits is the mighty hedge of protection he places around that nation. When one studies the 40 years of Israel's travel from Egypt to the Promised Land, the existence of his hedge of protection becomes quite apparent. During their journey in the wilderness, the Israelites encountered only one real challenge, which, with God's help, they overcame in one day. That hedge of protection also surrounded the Israelites during their conquest of the Promised Land. With respect to America, it's apparent God's hedge of protection encompassed America during the Revolutionary War of Independence. God protected and prospered America from the time the colonists arrived at the shores of North America through the end of the Second World War as the victor. In addition, God had so richly blessed America that it became the most powerful and wealthy nation on earth. Unfortunately, in the 1950s, Satan began tempting the people to believe that they needed God. They didn't need God anymore. Then, in a period of about 10 years, America had begun its journey down the road of apostasy to self-destruction.
What does it mean that human beings are created in the image of God?
Well, I touched on this issue briefly in the previous interview.
Yes.
And I again want to begin by citing the creation story in Genesis chapter 1, verses 27 and 26. Then God said, and I quote, "Let us make man in our image, in our likeness." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. God has two important characteristics. First, he's a spirit, and he is eternal. Therefore, we read in Genesis, every human being, male and female, has a soul, or what is a spirit, after each person's physical death, because each person's soul is eternal, it will continue to exist for eternity, either in heaven or hell. As I pondered the meaning of a human being created in God's image, I came to believe that every human being takes on the image of God at conception, and that's why God is so jealously protective of human life. That is why he considers abortion to be such an abominable procedure. And I sense God grieves for the 60 million unborn babies murdered in America since Roe v. Wade. God is grieving because not one of those babies ever had the opportunity to grow up and live out the plan he had for each one of them.
With us on the program, Philip Wittig. A couple minutes left in the show. His book is Apostasy Can Lead a Nation to Self-Destruct. Will America Mend Its Ways and Return to God? What do you consider to be the root cause of pluralism in America?
Well, during the last half of the 20th century, America had become a very pluralistic nation or society. In order to be politically correct, one had to accept the premise that all gods have equal standing. It appears that many politicians and commentators accepted that premise. I would challenge that premise with the fact that, as I said above, it was Almighty God who brought America through World War II as the victor and to the pinnacle of world leadership and power. I believe no other God was even in the least bit capable of performing such a feat. As I look at the last half of the 20th century, I see probably two root causes of the growth of a pluralism. First, America's growing and deepening apostasy led to widespread idolatry, and second, the immigration of various foreign nationals who brought with them their own non-Christian beliefs and religions.
Philip Wenig with us on the program, the book, and I'll give you information and his website here in just a second. 30 seconds or so left in the program. I know you've been working with Reader's Magnet in getting this book out to the public. What has that experience been like for you working with Reader's Magnet?
Well, it's been an interesting experience. You know, when you're working with some company, it's a complicated process as publishing a book.
Yes.
Gets to be challenging sometimes. But you learn from these kind of challenges, and that's, I guess, the position I have to take. We have to, God gives us these challenges, and we just need to take them on and move forward.
Well, it's interesting to have a partner like Reader's Magnet. It's sort of writing the book is the easy part. Now you've got to market it, get it out to the general public, which they are doing. The book we're talking about is Apostasy Can Lead a Nation to Self-Destruct. Will America Mend Its Ways and Return to God? The author is Philip Wenig, that's Wittig. His website is pmwittig.com. Great information at the website. And if you go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, you not only will be able to link up directly with Philip's website, but you can listen to our first interview. The audio will be in the archive section. It's available, of course, on iTunes and Spotify. And if you go to the video tab there, that'll take you to YouTube, and you can watch both of our interviews. Philip Wenig with us on the program. Philip, it is always a pleasure. Great information on the program today. Thank you so much for being with us. Always a pleasure to have you with us, sir.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Bratton, because you're such a wonderful host, and I appreciate that.
Well, those very kind words, and please call me Rick, and it is always a pleasure to have you on the program. Philip Wenig has been our guest. The book is Apostasy Can Lead a Nation to Self-Destruct. Will America Mend Its Ways and Return to God? Information available, of course, at our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.